It has long been said that ideas are everything, especially in the startup world. But what if having a laser focus on your idea can actually hold your business back? In the Ideas Last podcast, Danielle Gillespie interviews startup founders whose success came from obsessively focusing on execution instead of ideation. Each episode dissects what it actually takes to build a long-lasting, profitable startup rather than simply launching one, by putting your idea last.
Welcome to Ideas Last, the podcast about turning initial sparks into big results. I'm your host, Danielle Gillespie, and I'm excited to learn how top entrepreneurs turn their sparks into thriving companies. Today, we're going to be talking with James Herbert. James is the founder of Hasty, the financial well-being benefit platform that helps employers get the best from their workers and workers get the most from their money. We have a lot to talk about today, so let's dive right in. Hey, James, thanks so much for being with me today to have this conversation about Hasty and your product journey. I'm really looking forward to kind of diving in and seeing what brought you to where you are today and how you got there.
Thank you, Danielle. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm excited about it. Thank you.
Good. So I'm just going to dive right in. And mostly I'm kind of curious about what the spark for Hasty was. How did you get started? What was your aha moment? Why did you just think that this was a great idea?
I guess it's kind of a story of how a load of experiences combined over the years. But I founded my first business called Brightsparks while at university. And the idea there was kind of create the job I wish I had as a student. And that went on to employ about 20,000 predominantly students to work in hospitality. And after I don't know how many years of doing that, it was a problem I saw at the coalface that, you know, a lot of those students wanted to work, but they'd get to the end of the week and they couldn't actually afford the travel fare to get to carry on working for the Friday, Saturday, because they weren't paid until the following Friday. And it just seemed crazy to me that they weren't able to, you know, to be able to afford that, given the fact that actually Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, they've worked and they've earned that money. And it's just process that means you can't get it to them in time. And, you know, that business being a typical staffing and recruitment business was using invoice discounting. So, you know, they weren't getting paid by the clients until 60, 90 days terms, but they're having to pay their staff, you know, within a fortnight of that work. So I had this sort of, you know, 15 year later light bulb moment that maybe there's something we can do here where we can kind of try and, you know, give human beings the same kind of cash flow ability that companies get. And particularly as it's based on the work that they've already completed. And you know, on top of that, we then I started digging into the detail. I started seeing that it's not just this audience that we're employing here that have this problem, but there's a massive problem with people, you know, forced into high cost credit and, you know, overdrafts and credit card debt and worst of all payday loans. And, you know, this is a big problem. And actually, if people had liquidity based on the work they've actually done in real time, then that could solve a lot of that problem. And actually, there's a load of other benefits that would come out of that. You know, you're not getting people that can't get to work on time. So they're actually giving an opportunity to earn more. And, you know, it takes that stress away. So it reduces their financial stress, which again is going to make them more productive and so on and so forth. So I guess the need came from that experience of running and growing that business. And then, you know, just digging into the detail, we had experiences sort of building tech with that business, or, you know, running the legal side of it, understanding the finance. And I've been involved as a small investor and advisor of a couple of other tech startups and kind of put all of those different experiences in the mix. I had a stint at Lloyd's of London, the insurance market, and a stint as an investment banking graduate as well. So you put all that kind of things together, and that brought back that user needs, the financial understanding of it, the insurance understanding of it, legal framework, the technology. But particularly important was that sort of experience of having employed 20,000 people that needed the product and what was going to work for them. How did they interact? How was that going to work? And, you know, that really sort of came together and, you know, dug into the detail and came up with a sort of a solution. Enough other people thought that it wasn't a totally crazy idea that I managed to find a few sort of very early stage seed investors to support, you know, add to the money that I would have been putting myself. And, you know, it got to the proof point to prove that there was actually a need. And then it became easier to raise the capital that we needed to build out and develop the product and really crack on with the journey that we are now on and, you know, start fulfilling that that long-term vision.
Yeah, that's actually really cool. So there's a couple of questions that I have. The one, I really love the idea of sort of deploying these college kids who want to work, but you know, maybe just really want to do gig work, but they, you know, and then hospitality is just notorious for needing staffing. Were you able to find, I mean, what were your findings there? Were more people willing to work if they could just take a gig, take a couple night shifts than people that were, you know, like hospitality may be looking for full-time workers, but was there a better balance between staffing and inventory of people to be staffed?
I guess there are certain areas within hospitality and certain firms that base very much on we need consistency of people working every day, day in, day out, the same people. And then you've got others, and very much the brand that we built there and the sort of values of the company were based on, right, we want the right people that are going to be super engaging, that probably not going to be their forever job. They're doing it as a student, but they care, and they've got the people skills, and they know how to interact. And chances are they may be going to Twickenham or Wembley Stadium, you know, Royal Ascot or what have you, actually in their future careers as you know, entertaining clients or you know, with friends and family. But this is a stopgap to earn good money. But also, I mean, I think the hospitality industry is really, you know, I've got a big affinity for it, having spent a fair bit of my career in it and launched that business that, you know, took up the vast chunk of my early career. But it's a great ground to learn skills and develop skills that I think are crucially important in life and in business. And actually, if anything, I'm probably becoming more so. You know, that teamwork, hard work, client-facing environment. There's nothing more client-facing than front-of-house hospitality. So our focus was always on trying to find the people that are going to care about what they're doing, to give a great level of service, that are going to interact and be personable. And we sacrifice some of that consistency of people able to work, you know, 5, 6, 7 days a week because we're employing students. But we balance that by having a large student base. So some would be, you know, only work during holiday times. Some would work, you know, very regularly during term times based on what their, you know, classes and other commitments were. We had to have a larger pool to get the same number of consistent staff for when that was required. But also because it was events based, a lot of the largest events that we staffed were often during holiday times and weekends. You know, the rugby matches and the football matches tend to be at weekends. You know, the events of the season, the British Grand Prix, the, you know, Paris Air Show, Royal Ascot, all those famous ones are always in, you know, very often in university holiday time. So the peak seasons tended to match on the whole quite well the UK university timetable or rhythm. So that definitely helped. But it was a conscious decision that we focused on hiring that person, and that was the key rather than just bodies. And it's worked very well for that business as a brand. They tended to have to pay them a bit more. We paid them sooner, and we had a really good relationship with them. We invested in technology and built a lot of our own, so that, you know, the team were able to interact more with those people and add the human skills and the human touch themselves, because our staff really valued that, and we looked after them, and they weren't just numbers. And that was always a big positive, and helped us recruit and retain, you know, the staff, and motivate and engage the staff in that. And one of the things that we did when we went through a bit of a brand refresh was, you know, sent out and questioned and all of the staff and surveyed and what and everything else. And what are the things that matter to you most, and why do you want to work with us and not someone else? And, you know, as well as the brand and the fact that we treated them with respect and they generally got good jobs and they liked working with their colleagues. One of the key things is we paid quicker than a lot of others. And obviously, you know, they were the pilot customer for Hasty, as you can imagine. And, you know, getting, you know, even being paid at the quickly, it's then getting paid in real time was even more of a draw. So that massively helped them continue that recruitment and engagement drive and, you know, retention.
Yeah, I love that. I love how that sort of kind of got the ball rolling for Hasty, and it snowballed into some of the other industries. So as you went into new industries, was there anything unexpected that your customers loved about your product that you didn't realize that paying people earlier would have this sort of outcome?
I think actually the probably the biggest thing we got wrong or had to adjust was I wrongly thought the market was ready for what we were doing.
Okay.
And you know, I'd seen that was a need and for the workforce, and you know, getting some investors and on board. The early investors, they tend to be very financially astute and tend to be quite forward looking. And we put that together, and actually I was very, very lucky actually in the hit ratio in raising that early investment. I had about a 70% hit ratio, which is almost unheard of. Partners that had a customer could trial it on and track record there and some build up some relationships. So that was really, really good. And then we developed the product to be ready for actually going out to the wider market and then started selling it. And I just kind of thought that the world was ready for it and it was going to be build it and they will come. I mean, one of our mistakes is we hired a customer success manager before we hired sales. what was I thinking at the time? Completely ridiculous. But the biggest probably adjustment we've had to make to that was understanding that corporates didn't necessarily understand the need. In the UK in particular, we tend to not really, you know, stiff up a lip and not talk about our finances. Therefore, a lot of the companies don't necessarily understand anywhere near the level of financial stress that the workforce is under, don't necessarily want to admit it. You know, people don't talk about their finances a lot. And they didn't really necessarily understand the need. And then on top of that, there was, hang on, are you just a payday lender? What, you know, you like Wonga? And we're like, no, we're the opposite, right? Just because Wonga and the payday lenders are going bust, you know, being regulated away, which is fantastic. It doesn't mean that people's liquidity problems, their cash flow problems have been eradicated. In fact, our research has shown that for a certain proportion of the workforce, actually, they're under more financial stress because they've got even less places to go and people get desperate for money. I mean, if your clutch goes and you can't afford to fix it and you lose your job because you can't get to work as a result, and you'll pay a payday lender to be able to fix your clutch, you don't lose your job. So, you know, there was a lot of time where we were sort of spent the early stages of this business very much trying to educate the awareness that, you know, we're the direct opposite of that. You know, the reason payday lenders are there is because people need to borrow money from the payday lenders to get to the point of the month when they receive the money they've already earned. We give people the money they've already earned whenever they need it, whenever they want it, as soon as it's earned. So they never need to go to a payday lender. It's the exact opposite. And it's not, and because it's, and we did a lot of work in getting through this, but that's why we, you know, in partnership with Visa, we launched the world's first direct salary debit card, because it's a debit card. It's their money. They've earned it. It's just about you don't get it until the end of the month, because that's the payroll process, the payroll system. It solves a huge need, which is actually an increasing need. You know, the audience is the gig economy and freelance economy is increasing. There's less consistency of earnings, which again increases the need for that liquidity and that control. And financial control puts people, you know, in a much better, more stress-free, more, you know, higher levels of financial well-being. And that has great knock-on effects to improving their, you know, their mental health and their productivity at work. Which is powerful. But yeah, I think that for me was one of the biggest things that we had to understand, and where we spent a lot of time and effort is in that awareness and that education of what's going there. And that's probably still our biggest challenge, is A, why are we different? And we pretty much got there now. B, the need is there, even if your workforce aren't admitting to it. You know, statistically, there's a problem there. Statistically, right. In society, you listen, you know, the Money Charity, Money Advice Service, Step Change, and the other debt charity, there is a big problem there. And, you know, we can all address it. And I actually think that as corporates, as employers and as corporates, we have a responsibility to do what we can to help that. And to say, hey, it's your choice, it's your money, we're going to give you control, and people can use it differently. But, you know, most of these people are out of vote, and we're dictating when they can get paid. It kind of seems crazy.
Yeah, it is a little bit crazy. So one thing that I was thinking about in particular is that we have a company in Pittsburgh who did a lot of research around driver safety, and that they found that many of the people that were having accidents were because they were preoccupied with their financial concerns. So this is, I mean, it just seems like it would resolve a lot of that sort of distraction on the road, when if people are worried about, like you said, the broken clutch or
roof leak or kids got to go to the hospital, those kinds of things. You know, it's hard to get to a rainy day fund as a you know, somebody who's employed and working and fresh out of college, or anybody who's got, you know, a job that they're just kind of grinding away at. So it's hard to get to a nest egg, but it seems like a great step to at least being able to get through a day to get you to the next day.
Absolutely. And I think it's, the research shows that, you know, we've done independent research, and there's obviously not just us doing it, but there's the charities doing it and other businesses that work within the financial wellbeing space doing a lot of research. But our own research showing that 2/3 of the workforce are struggling with financial stress. You know, EY estimate that it costs, I think, the US and UK companies $350 billion of lost productivity a year. It's stopping 28% of people. It's affecting their sleep, and then it affects their relationships and it affects their productivity. You know, it is a big problem. And how can you do that? But beyond that side of things, it's also, we found it's helping people develop a much more healthy relationship with work and with money, better understanding the value of their time and better understanding being better able to manage money. So again, a lot of the advice you get from the charities and the budgeting is allow yourself small amounts of money and you drip feed that into a separate account and do it. Well, there's nothing more powerful than kind of being drip fed the money in real time as you're actually earning it. You know, you get to the end of the month, you know that how hard you've worked, you've seen it go up on the app, you've drawn it when you need to. You're much less likely to go and buy, you know, 3 new pairs of trainers when you realized how hard it is you work with that. And that link between, oh, today I go out and I earn some money and tomorrow I do the same. And it's not just an end of the month thing. Actually, it's a buildup of these different things. It's developing a better relationship with work and a better relationship with money, and actually driving really positive behaviors. So a combination of the reduced stress as well as the improved motivation. We had one of our customers has come back to us. They're monitoring this very well. They've got very good sort of, you know, even capital management solutions and platforms in their product, but it's a security business. Their users of Hasty are doing 72% more overtime shifts because of the direct link between effort and reward.
Wow.
It's ultimately a human thing.
That's great. Yeah.
You know, we like effort reward. You know, we expel effort. We're kind of still hunter-gatherers at our core. And the idea of hunting and gathering on day one of the month and not eating until day 30 is totally alien to us, right? We would have starved to death. So you link effort and reward, and as well as the other sort of benefits around reduced financial stress that we've described, actually it changes those motivations and appeals to us at a sort of a species level, and is very powerful and effective. And then, of course, linking that, you know, there's different things together and people getting that higher level of financial understanding. We layer financial management tools and financial education on top of everything we do. And we have an incentive that the more financially, you know, astute, that high level of financial understanding our users have, the better they use it, the more they get out of it, and so on and so forth. But it's also just the right thing to do. If we can upskill, the workforce and society financially, then it's going to be a positive going forward. And my personal opinion that financial education should form part of the school curriculum. We're teaching school kids and stuff, you know, because
for sure.
Yeah.
Everywhere. That's a global request.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you talked a little bit about your sort of sales pivot and your sales challenge and kind of weave your way around teaching people how you're different and why you're important. Were there product pivots that you found you had to make, and how are you monitoring whether or not you need to make those pivots? So a lot of companies that I advise ask me questions about how, you know, everyone wants to build, but, you know, many companies shouldn't just be building. What are some examples of ways that you've monitored and sort of provided a feedback loop right into your product that you might be willing to share?
Absolutely. Well, we've got two customers because we're a B2B2C. So we work with organizations and we work with their people, and we have this sort of, you know, the relationship with both. We have to therefore listen to the feedback from both parties of what matters to them. And particularly when you're dealing with big corporates and enterprises, how does it fit into their model? And I think one of the things that wasn't in our earliest MVPs was the financial education. So it was the access to it. You know, it was a very basic product. You know, I, for want of a better analogy, I sometimes use the building the Amazon of finance type analogy. And that was very much us selling books, you know, and we've had to build out more and more products as we go forward. And you know, the financial education is a big part of that, improved financial management with layering on top perks and rewards and cashbacks where people can actually make their money go further as well as better managed. So we've turned it into a much more of a sort of financial health hub. And the fact that it's all in one place rather than, you know, potentially, you know, some people could use multiple different apps for the same thing, link different things together. But the organizations are much happier now that there's more in that single place coming from us. And if they're going to sponsor it through the organization, they want to know that they're doing the right thing and providing the full range, full spectrum of services that matter, and that they feel that they're fulfilling their corporate responsibility. You know, that fulfilling that corporate responsibility, in this, particularly in the ESG world that we're now in, is really, really key. And, you know, we can help them fulfill that, not just by giving them reduced financial stress, but actually by upskilling their workforce financially to build on that and educate them. And employers are actually in a really privileged position where actually, even though a fair proportion of people don't particularly like their employer, they trust them. And the reason they trust them is they get paid on time. And around that pay cycle, they have interaction. And if you can increase the frequency of that pay cycle and give them more control of that and empower people to have, choose when they get paid, guess what? That actually improves that bond. It also gives them more touch points where, you know, as an organization, they feel part of it. It also gives them more touch points where they're likely to consume financial education where otherwise they might not have done. So there's a big positive to linking to something that isn't, you know, a really core part of people's lives, increasing the frequency of which they can access that core part of their lives and reap the benefits of it in a range of different sort of, you know, lots of small things add up to a really big whole. And that interaction it helps. Building the products around that and the things that matter to those corporates and enterprises have been really, really useful. And that's helped us, I think, add more value to the app, to the user, with things that we might not necessarily have done if we were only listening to one party. And then there's things that really matter to the users that, you know, quite simply the organizations don't care about that much. And we've kind of got to balance both and make sure there are no conflicts in that. And then obviously then try and keep that all motoring towards the long-term vision of how can we, you know, really reinvent how people control their financial lives to make them, their organizations, you know, and obviously at scale society more productive.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you're doing a lot of really great stuff. Are there any sort of quantitative measures that you're taking inside of the product so you can see what people are using and doing, or is it mostly like, you know, you're getting great feedback from your customer, the corporations, or a little bit of both? How are you kind of getting that feedback connected?
Both. So some of the feedback we get is anecdotal, and a lot of that's just because how the organizations we're working with have previously been tracking it. So and what is the control on that? So we say, okay, we've got reduced absenteeism, but is that this or is it some other factor? Were they really monitoring absenteeism, and were they monitoring other factors? So some of it's anecdotal. I mean, a number of our, particularly within the likes of hospitality, which obviously since COVID kicked off has not been a particularly busy sector. But before that, they were taking, you know, 30 to 40%, you know, more shifts were being picked up by people that were using it. And again, some of that is slightly more anecdotal, and other companies have got real data. So we work with our client partners to get whatever we can with that. And the richer and the more detailed the feedback, the better it is. But some of it just simply has to be, you know, very qualitative and anecdotal. And obviously within our technology, we have heaps of data. You know, how are people earning? How are people interacting? What page are they watching? What are they going back to? How many are engaging with the financial education? How often? How many are on our app? How often are they withdrawing funds? How often are they using the card? And again, that's interesting. We've got more control over that because it's our data and we can monitor it. And then we can say, that's really interesting. Let's dig into the next little bit of that and let's watch that trend. And is there something we've done with that cohort compared to this cohort that means that can be different than anything else? And that's how we kind of get more around the behavior with that side of stuff. I mean, a couple of the key things, yeah, excluding the card, which is brand new, If we're looking at the traditional model of how people go into that, an average user is in the app 21 times a month. And that's really interesting. So they're highly engaged with tracking their earnings and managing their funds around it. But that same average user is withdrawing funds through the app 4.6 times a month. So roughly weekly, which kind of makes sense, right? If you're looking back at the human behavior side of things, weeks kind of work for us. We work on days because we have light and dark. We kind of work on weeks because the weeks and religion and everything else has just been in society for millennia and millennia and millennia, pretty much forever, right? And we work on seasons because there's meaningful changes to cycles and things that happen and changes of, what flora and fauna are out there, what you eat, what's part of your diet, and, when it gets light and dark and everything else. So they're kind of the bits around that the human interacts, and the calendar month isn't. So the fact that people are actually budgeting and managing their lives by taking cash out at the end of each week on a weekly basis, it makes a lot of sense when you just take a step back and look at it. And, maybe we could have predicted a bit more of that in hindsight, but, monitoring that and seeing how that engagement increases and what more we can do and how they interact with the financial education on that cycle is all stuff that we're constantly developing.
Yeah, I love that. I think that if people hear that story, I think that they would then be able to understand how to take that same template and that mindset and bring it to their own product development, right? I think a lot of young companies struggle with how to collect data or what to collect. And sometimes they don't understand that you could just start collecting and then you'll figure out what you want to collect. Then you can sort of synthesize it and draw some conclusions.
I guess the only challenge with that we face more and more now is GDPR regulation of our ability to collect data without a real purpose of collecting it.
Oh yeah, I don't mean creepy collecting data.
Yeah. I think the most important thing though with it all is, and this is kind of it's got to be the role of someone in the organization. It's very much been the type of thing that's been a part of my role as founder, and we've created a new category pretty much. But it's all around having a hypothesis you can test. And then you'll learn from that and you can test another one. You can add and you can, slowly refine the test and ask more questions, but you've got to ask questions that you can actually do something with. And some of it will be qualitative, some will be quantitative. These things are an art as well as a science. You've got to think about how these different things work and interact. And okay, well, we did that and it was a total flop. Because our data told us a total flop. So what can we learn from that? And can we just change it slightly and change that? Or do we need just to say that people aren't interested in it? And what does interest? So, having testable hypotheses is kind of important. You've got to do some blue sky thinking occasionally because the old Ford saying is if you ask people what they wanted, they've been faster horses. Sometimes you've got to try and predict the future and then test whether some of those predictions are right. And, sometimes go, actually, I'm still so sure that is right, but it's just the wrong time. So we're going to shelve that. We're going to come back to it. And we're going to test that again in the future when I think we've done a few iterations and we've taken people on a journey because we're developing this new product, developing this new way of thinking and developing people's relationships with their work and with finances.
That's awesome. So I guess I'd like to just switch gears a little bit. You were mentioning before we got started here that you have a new role in your company. You want to share some more information about that with us?
Yeah. So we recently acquired a Spanish business called Tips, which we're doing the same as us in Spain. A great team, which was obviously one of the main motivations for doing it. And it's been an interesting process. Their co-founder and CEO and myself only met once in Porto, in Portugal, actually, back in September, when it was the only place where basically the two of us could get in and out of with all the COVID restrictions and quarantines and everything else to spend a few days together to thrash out what it worked. And the rest of the deal was done over Zoom, which was pretty crazy. Impressive. He's taken over after integrating the businesses and driving it forward and looking at the balance of the team and the structure and the skills we can bring. We decided that the right thing to do was for Jaime to take over, be promoted from COO, which is where he was at, to run come in as CEO. So he's running the growth and the operations and all of that side of things. It's obviously a great advantage with a, you know, we've got a hub here and a hub in Spain now. He's completely bilingual, he can communicate better, and he's a real operator on that. He's grown SaaS businesses and everything else. And I've, as I like to say, I've promoted myself. So still very much founder, and I get to focus on that long-term vision and the strategy and the strategic projects. And I get to benefit from the fact that I've grown this from zero to where we are. And there's a load of weird intricacies of how different things work together and those funny levers. And, you know, that's where I can really, you know, how all the different things work together and where that direction's going. And, you know, doing that longer term thinking tends to be where I'm being more of a disruptor. It tends to be where I can sort of add more value in the current structure. And yeah, Jaime's just fantastic at running that business from, you know, and driving it forward from a CEO's growth point of view.
That's awesome. Congratulations. It sounds like it's going to be a really exciting next 12 months for you guys.
Yeah, we're pretty pumped about it. So yeah, we've got some good big clients that are signing up at the moment. We'll be able to announce soon. And, you know, we've got some real momentum coming. It's been a funny old year where we've had entire workforces furloughed and not being able to access it and having to talk to them. And some of them really needed it then, but they simply, you know, the data's not coming through from their employer, and, you know, industry's going all over the place. We started working with the NHS, which was fantastic, with helping frontline NHS workers, National Health Service, for those not listening in the UK, you know, to the whole hospitality industry and travel industry just being shut down.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So yeah, I'm excited to see how things are starting to open up and how people are engaging with it and following that engagement left, you know, and more different types of workers working with it and the changing of demographics we've seen. And I think one of the key interesting ones is how people use it when they start going back to the office more. So yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff. And I think, you know, as well as that, we've got some great growth going on. There's some real momentum now. One of the big powerful things I think we've seen within over the last year is there's been, you know, a lot of that awareness and education we've done ourselves, but also just the industry and other parties that are getting involved and backing it, you know, is really powerful, and that's starting to come through. So, you know, there's some real momentum building in the sector. You know, we've got some great products and some great products to get out there and to the users. And, you know, some of it's stuff where they don't know if they want it yet, and we'll test and learn. And there's some stuff that it's requests from users and corporates, and we're pretty sure they want it, but we'll see whether they want it as much as they think they do.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. And then I guess if you feel comfortable answering this, is there something that you're kind of wrestling with right now in terms of the product that you are trying to think your way through, or anything that you might need to put a little more muscle behind in the next 6 months?
I mean, the hardest thing really is balance. You know, we are a growing startup, so you're always resource constrained. Right. You know, we've got to hit more milestones, and, you know, you bring in more revenue and then you can reinvest that revenue. We bring in more investment, and we can invest that and go forward. And you have to keep going from milestone to milestone, improving these points. And there's a million things we want to do. And particularly when you've got sort of, you know, new products you want to develop for both the employer as well as the worker, but also you've got integrations to do. And if you're rolling out to large enterprise, some of those integrations can be very consuming, and obviously you've got to do that to get on board. And, you know, so there's just so many competing needs for our resources and competing demands for our resources. So I think one of the hardest things with all of this is just balance. You know, I think a key focus for me that I've always tried to keep in mind whenever I'm thinking about how do we manage this is opportunity cost. And I think the concept of opportunity cost is absolutely key in growing any startup. Because, you know, if you deploy 100,000 here, that's 100,000 you can't deploy somewhere else. And the opportunity cost of that 100,000 not being deployed there could be far greater. So I think conceptually thinking about opportunity cost for me has always been something that's helped me make better decisions. You know, that's kind of the ongoing plate spinning and balance is the kind of key challenge. And then, of course, the other big challenge as well for any startup is how do you hire retain the right people, the best people? Because often if they're good ones, they could be earning a lot of money somewhere else, and they're going to be in demand everywhere. So, you know, that's one of the other challenges is, you know, making sure you find and keep the best people, and usually get them on less money than they can earn elsewhere because you're a startup and they've got to buy into it. But, you know, you can't afford to pay the big bucks that the big guys can.
That's true. A lot of people, though, that can be very passionate about this, so I'm sure you'll have a lot of success finding good people.
Yeah, we've been lucky so far.
Okay, and then I guess I just have one more question. What's the next big thing you're thinking about? Could be on any topic.
That's a really big question. wow. I mean, I guess if we're talking about Hasty, which, if I'm honest, outside of family, pretty much consumes everything. It's how do we just keep taking those steps towards that ultimate vision? And what are the milestones? How do we manage all those competing resources, you know, demands for our resources, so we can kind of keep on that path towards executing on the vision while adapting, to what we need to, you know, to deliver for our users and our clients, but also adapting to what we learn. And we learn every day, and things are changing, and there's a new technology that's coming out, there's a new partner might be able to speed something up, and this is ever sort of evolving evolution, and you've just got to keep sucking up all of that information and using that to make quick decisions. So, you know, really for me, it's just how do we execute on this vision is just all consuming, and that's something I enjoy doing. And, you know, how can we have that, you know, get this really big? Because the bigger it is, the bigger positive impact we can have on people and society.
That's awesome.
Thank you. I should have, you didn't give me warning of that one. I could possibly.
Something
bigger.
That one just popped into my head.
good to be put on the spot with something that's, I mean, it's big. It's around human behavior. It's, you know, I'm just interested. I love people. And one of the reasons that I got into this is, you know, the human behavior, the sort of experiment of it, and of how can we do it? Are people going to interact with it this way? You know, how is that going to make the world better? Are they going to do it? You know, and also just working with people, you know, one of the reasons for doing this, and I personally found the various lockdowns hard because I spar off other people. I really enjoy that human interaction. So it's, yeah, the center of all of this is around people. It's around the human, it's around the end user of it. And, yeah, that's definitely kind of the focus of the purpose of where it goes and what usually consumes that sort of long-term vision and driving that forward.
I love that. That's awesome. Thank you so much again for chatting with me today. It's a great conversation. I love what you're doing. I love the people aspect and giving people more confidence and more freedom and sort of more ownership in their own life. So I think I love it. It's great. Good luck.
Thank you very much, Danielle. Thank you very much for having me. It's been a really enjoyable conversation.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.